The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max, Monday Night Raw, review.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling to the Max's Raw Review for July 3rd, 2017, and we are brought to you by the W2Mnet.com, if I can speak. Also, just to let you know, we are brought to you by 411mania.com as well. Hey, and if you'd like to go find your podcast wherever they may be, on maybe Apple Podcast or maybe some other places like Podcast Addict, just go search out Wrestling to the Max and go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review. If you love W2Mnet.com and everything that that awesome website has to offer, make sure you go ahead and go subscribe at W2M Network. That'll get you all the podcasts that we have to offer you, and they are so great and so exciting that we don't want you to miss out. So we mention it every week and every time we get an opportunity. I am Gary Vaughn. Along with me is Mr. the host, of course, Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And people, please thank your lucky stars that Paul is your host tonight, because obviously you can hear I am not my normal self. I am quite hoarse. I was at a Hall & Oates concert and I could not handle myself. I've literally melted. Is that true? Well, not really. But
it's
I would
possible
lie
in Texas. Don't let yeah. Gary lie to you.
I would dream of it. I would love to go to a Hall & Oates concert. I'm kidding, of course. I think if I went to The Cure, I may do that. I may lose my voice because of that. This is because of allergies, though, sadly. No awesome concerts happen. I did not mark out over New Japan, which I would, trust me, my voice would be like this if I would have been in Long Beach this past weekend. But anyway, I am here, and I am ready to do Raw no matter what. Sick. Happy, healthy, I don't care. I can't wait to talk about this Raw. So, Paul, let's do it. Let's get into what happened this Monday night.
Let's just jump right in, man, because this is a go-home episode for Great Balls of Fire this Sunday here in Dallas, Texas, which, of course, is mine and Gary's neck of the woods, as it were. And they open with maybe something that'll surprise you, although I think they opened with him last week in Enzo and Cass. Enzo comes out. He gets the promo to talk about how he's, you know, how Cass is turning his back on everything they've built together, how they used to be best friends, and he also takes some time to put himself over. You know, he knows he's not the biggest or the strongest or the baddest dude to walk into the ring, but he says he's the most resilient. He knows who he is, and he's willing to say that about three or four times because that's what Enzo does, and he this does lead to the match being made between the two, although neither of them would say anything, and you know, you wouldn't really know it from this, but they, I believe it was announced on .com today. So after he cuts the promo, which the crowd loved, he jumps Cass in the back while he's doing an interview and attacks him some, which is cool, and they get broken up and separated and all that, and that's all you're going to see from them, but I thought this was pretty solid stuff here on my end.
Yeah, and, you know, it's good that they had Enzo out there cutting the promo like he did, because he did feel like he was doing it from not only his heart, but from the fact that he's saying, look, I'm overcoming. I may be a little guy, but I'm going to overcome all this. I'm not going to be worried about, you know, everyone hating on me and all that stuff. I'm going to be the one-man army. And so I thought that was kind of cool. He even mentioned Tupac, which was kind of funny too. Tupac's got that movie coming out. It's kind of relevant, right? So anyway, my point being is all this made sense. You gotta have yourself a match on Great Balls of Fire. They allowed Enzo to look good, especially attacking Big Cass, which is kind of funny. I mean, for a guy his size, it's kind of funny, but at the same point, I think they make their thoughts and some reality be thrown out there that, hey, there is a possibility that Kaz could get knocked down a peg, even though that's unbelievable still. They want to throw in some shadow of a doubt. Kind of try to do that here. So, like you said, Paul, everything kind of worked out the way it needed to. I mean, I think it was fairly strong. Not amazingly strong, but fairly strong going into Great Balls of Fire with this feud, and I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, I think people know what they're going to get at Great Balls of Fire in a match between these two, so you're not going to sell them on great wrestling, but you can sell them on the story, which is what's drawn a lot of people in. You can sell them on the babyface fire that Enzo has, which he does have, in great amounts. And to make things fair, whenever he attacks Cass, he literally flies into the frame. So jumping ability also seems to be in his repertoire.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what he's going to have to depend on, is being an aerial and things like that, because he's never going to win in a ground game against Cass. We just know that. So right. It's much appreciated. And, you know, I think they're doing their best with this feud. This is kind of a hard feud to really set up, because it's not really a long-burning feud. This feud came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. This wasn't something where you kind of saw it coming. This was like, oh, all of a sudden, here we are. And there you go. So you're going to kind of get that, but I think they've done the best they can.
I was about to say, do you think that sort of plays to the strength here? Because the 3-4 segments these guys have had since the breakup have really been quality stuff, I would say. And certainly the initial angle where Kaz turned on him got a lot of emotion inside the arena from the crowd and all that. So, I mean, I feel like this actually has some pretty good heat into it going into their match, despite maybe 3 or 4 weeks of buildup.
It's got good heat, but I think there's so many fans out there who enjoy these guys as a tag team. So it kind of it's a little bit of a 50-50 thing, I think, with fans as well. I don't think a lot of fans want to see this happen, so they're kind of going into the match, kind of like myself, going into this match kind of saying, I'll watch it, I'll see what happens, but I'm not really thrilled about it, because I love these guys together. I think that's what kind of maybe puts a little bit of the flame out, but for the most part, I think you're right. When it comes to a feud that as this is, and where it's kind of unbelievable in the match, I think it does need to be short and sweet, and I think they've done a good job in that short time span. There's really a lot of bad things that can happen between these two guys if you slowly burn it, because it's not there. So right. I think you're right on that.
Yeah, this is definitely not one you want to play out. This goes to this pay-per-view, maybe a little bit longer if you can find a way to bring in some other guys and build a tag team situation out of this, but for sure... I think the shorter time frame has played well to this feud. And really, I just have to question what they're going to do long term with these guys, right? I mean, Enzo can find himself another tag team partner, and you'd probably be safe there. Or, of course, there's all the talk of, it's speculation, but 205 Live obviously could be in his future, even though he's had promos where he says he weighs 206. So... And I don't know where exactly you go with Big Cass after this, because the heels are really, I think, the strongest part on Raw right now, and there's so many of them performing at a top caliber. I don't know where exactly you could spotlight Big Cass right now.
You know, that's a huge problem. We've talked about this with Finn Balor, haven't we? Because, I mean, look where Finn Balor went from being one of the top guys when it comes to, hey, I'm going to go after the Universal title, to being now, I'm here, just try not to forget about me. Mm-hmm. Just keep me in your vision. I just want you guys to know I'm still in that top echelon, but I'm here. There's nowhere really for him to go at the moment. And I think you threw Big Cass in that same realm, because really, I don't see... even in 3 months from now, Big Cass going for the Universal title, unless they do a multi-man match. And right now you have so many guys at that level, like, you know, even Bray Wyatt's been thrown in that level where, you know, there's a pecking order. And at the moment, I think Big Cass has to wait at the back of the line. I don't see him jumping anywhere close to the front of the line. So I'm a little bit concerned about him, but I still think that they can do some things with him and maybe find something, but I just don't know. I have a lot of worry. I kind of like you on that. And Enzo, I mean, he's a guy, like I said, he can do okay by himself, but he really needs a tag team partner. Yeah. I don't think 205 Live is going to do him any good. I just don't think he fits there. And I think the only place I really see Enzo really being amazing and not possibly being put in a bad situation is if he was to be a manager or a tag team partner, and It's just a singles run does not do well for him, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's going to expose a lot of the problems that he does have in the ring. So I definitely think a tag team with that. And to that end, I still think he's going to end up with a Big Show at some point, and that certainly could be Cass's big feud after this is with the Big Show. So if that bridge hadn't been burned with Enzo, which I guess we'll have to just watch, keep on watching Raw and wait and see if that's true. Let's go ahead and move on. You mentioned Finn Balor, so let's go ahead and talk about him because he faces off against Cesaro. But before that, Cesaro and Sheamus have a meeting with Kurt Angle where he reveals the stipulation for their tag team championship match at Great Balls of Fire. It's going to be a 30-minute Iron Man match, which gave me a big giant smile because I'll be at the show live, and I love both these teams so much. And 30 minutes is just at the same time super exciting, and at the same time a little nerve wracking because the Hardy Boys are not they're not as young as they used to be, Gary. And
newsflash,
yeah, shocker. And they do a great job, I think, of building this up. They have the Hardy Boys sit on commentary for this match with Cesaro and Finn Balor because Cesaro won a competition to stay sharp, and they get about 15 minutes. You have supposedly Matt Hardy is close to closing a deal to get the rights to the Broken Matt Hardy gimmick. So he's kind of tuning up a little. He's doing a little bit more of the accent. He's doing a bit more of the mannerisms on commentary, which is nice. And they end up running in after Elias. Samson comes out to distract Finn. We have sort of this huge brawl on the outside, which leads to a really hot finish as Finn puts Cesaro away with the coup de grace to keep his momentum going. And it does look like that Balor and Elias will have themselves a bit of a match at Great Balls of Fire, although I don't believe that has officially been added. But the tag team match is a go. What are your thoughts on all of this, Gary?
Okay, so I'll start with Finn Balor, and then I'll jump into the tag stuff. I think Finn Balor here needed to look strong, and they did that, right? But they did it in a fashion where it really didn't kill Cesaro. So.
Right.
I think that's a huge plus. I mean, they could have put these both, you know, both of them in a situation where they both kind of had a struggle to look good, and they didn't do that. So I'm very, very happy with that. I think Finn Balor, you know, moving on and doing this thing with Elias Samson is very actually a positive. And I know it's weird to say that, right? Because if you would have told me 2 months ago that that's a positive thing, I would have laughed at you and said, wow, Raw sucks. So now that you look at it, and we've had this discussion, I'm not going to go into this, you know, the whole thing about Elias Samson, but I think they put him in a good situation where it's very plausible for these two guys to get in the ring, mix it up, and Finn Balor's an excellent wrestler. I think he'll really help Elias along, and I think they'll put a pretty darn good show on, and so I'm happy with that. And I think, you know, having him go in looking strong is a really good deal. So very happy with Finn Balor right now and what they've got going, even though once again, he's not in the spot that a lot of us want him to be. We want him to be in that Universal picture. I think he'll eventually be in the Universal title picture. It's just at the moment, they got to do some other things. And let's talk about the tags. So the tag team division has been kind of weird, but at the same time, this feud actually is kind of growing on me more than I was. At first, I was kind of saying, okay, we've had the Hardys, we've had Sheamus and Cesaro. Wow, let's just be done with it. Let's just move on. And what they've been giving us, Paul, especially with the fact that Cesaro and Sheamus have looked so great as a tag team compared to what they first did, I think now I can sit here and say 30 minutes is perfect. I think it's going to be a match that we're going to sit there and say at the end of the night in Great Balls of Fire, wow, they put on a pretty good show. That may be with the match of the night. And I think the Hardys are a tag team. Yes, they're older. Yes, there's a big possibility that they could, you know, not want to say the I-N-J-U-R-E-D word. I'll spell it so I can knock on wood and all that stuff. But I think that they can hang. They've had great matches. We've seen them at WrestleMania time. That match of the Young Bucks was great. It wasn't a short match. So I think these guys can have a match with Cesaro and Sheamus and really do a good job. They're veterans. They can make things happen when maybe it's not working so well. So I'm really looking forward to that stuff. And I think this whole thing kind of sets it up great. You know, especially on commentary. Like you said, just having those guys on commentary is doing them a favor. And hey, if they're close to that deal for the broken stuff, I am ecstatic, because that has really needed to be a part of the Hardys' repertoire. I think it makes them even more special. They're kind of going on the laurels of, we're the Hardys. I can't wait till there's something new.
Right. And if we're talking about this feud going forward, and they do happen to get the rights to the broken gimmick sooner rather than later now, you could add a whole new life to this tag team division, this feud, this everything. And then if you ever do decide to split the Hardys up in the near future, you could – it's easy, right? I mean, broken Matt Hardy's a phenomenal gimmick, and you can have Jeff going back to being Jeff, and people love that version of Jeff Hardy. So,
Oh, yeah.
They're in a great spot here. I'm really looking forward to this match. I wasn't worried about so much about injuries. It was more about maybe them getting gassed or something like that. But they're incredibly smart workers. They've been around the business for a long time. They know better than anybody where they're at health wise, you know, stamina wise, all that stuff. And I don't think they would do this unless they felt comfortable doing so. So
yeah, and I agree with that. And the one last thing I'll say is, if this broken gimmick thing is going to happen, you've got to have someone fully break Matt. I think they still have to do that on WWE television. I don't think it really just needs to all of a sudden go, hey, No, right. I would love, and if you ask me, Cesaro and Sheamus both being the kind of guys they are, I would love it if they were the ones to break Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely think
it could happen, too. I mean, they have the build, and like we know they hit hard. You know, you take enough hits to the dome and you lose enough matches for the tag team titles that you've, you know, literally have your fingerprints on all across, you know, three decades. Just, you know, I mean, what more do you need to be a little bit broken on the inside?
Exactly. So, I mean, once again, this is a perfect storm if they can make it happen. We'll see.
For sure. Talking about matches that I'm super excited for, holy crap, Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe is going to be great. Tonight they do these sit-down promos with them backstage. Samoa Joe quickly dismisses Michael Cole from his question-asking and starts running around Brock. Brock and Paul Heyman don't really seem to be taking Samoa Joe all that seriously. And Brock calls Joe a coward and all this stuff, which really sets him off. He decides he wants to go find him in the building. He wants to fight tonight. So he strips off all the microphones. He walks across the arena with people trailing after him, trying to settle him down so he doesn't go in there and tear Brock's head off. And by the time he gets there, Kurt Angle has shown up with a security detail. It takes them, plus some road agents and some referees. There's literally about 30 people holding Samoa Joe back as Brock Lesnar just sort of taunts him. I am so ready for this fight, Gary. It's unbelievable.
So I would look at this card and say, okay, yeah, it looks pretty decent. I think that's cool. I, you know, sure, I'd like to go to that show. This match makes me so jealous of you that you're going. And honestly, I was considering buying tickets and all that. And I had some other things going on. So I said, I'll just kind of take this one out, take it off, you know, and maybe not go to this one. Now I'm like freaking like upset because this match looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Just by the way they've set it up. I love this. I love that interview, the split screen. You've got them going back and forth. And, you know, honestly, man, I really kind of felt like you were watching CNN or Fox News or something. They were going back and forth like a freaking debate. Like they were, it's this, what they were talking about was the most serious thing in the room. Mm-hmm. And it is. It should be. The Universal title should be the most important thing. And we don't get enough of that. But these two guys want to kill each other, not just for the Universal title. It's more about respect. It's more about showing who's the top dog. And I love, 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 love Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman just kind of smirking and being just passive, like, you're nothing. We don't care. We've beat everybody, The Rock, blah, 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 all these other big names. And I love also, you have to, on the flip side, you've got Samoa Joe saying, look, you beat all those guys, but guess what? I have my own laundry list of guys I've beaten, you know? So It's fun. It's great. It's exciting. And this should pump you up, especially when Joe, I mean, my God, the fierceness, the anger that he comes out and goes looking for these guys. Overall, I think this was a wonderful job. You couldn't done it any better unless you actually had the two guys in the ring, and they didn't need it. That's what's amazing, Paul. They didn't need these guys in the ring. Usually they need it to happen. They didn't have to do it that way. Great job.
I can't speak highly enough about Samoa Joe's performance for this entire feud. Since he's won the number one contendership, he has been the reason to watch Raw every week. And certainly Paul Heyman has helped out a lot here. And even to an extent, Brock Lesnar, just being smug and admittedly giving a lot to Samoa Joe in the build-up here. Because if they didn't do what they've done with Joe so far, I don't think anybody would be nearly as hyped for this matchup as they are. Because Joe looks credible. He looks like he's a threat. He might be able to win this, all things considered. And I certainly, like, I was talking about it in the group a little bit, that I think they might have found the guy who should beat Brock Lesnar here at Great Balls of Fire. And I understand that they have plans going forward to SummerSlam and that Joe probably still doesn't have a hope in hell of walking out with that championship. But my God, if you want somebody doing what you want Brock to do every week, it's Samoa Joe. It's been him this entire time. And oh my, that is my dream right now, is for him to walk out of Great Balls of Fire in Dallas this Sunday with the championship.
Would a tear come out of your eye?
A small, manly tear, the likes of Enzo Amore, would dot my face. The camera would find me in the audience, I know they would, and just zoom right in.
that gangsta tear is going to come out, Paul. Exactly. I'm looking forward to it. You know, and I'm right there with you, man. I would love it more than anything if that was to take place. And I understand why maybe they wouldn't have it happen. I get that. I understand you still want Brock Lesnar to lose the title if he's going to lose the title at SummerSlam or a big show. And this is kind of a B pay-per-view, maybe not the right place. But you know what? Sometimes this is the right place. Sometimes those places that no one expects things to happen, and they do happen, make them even more special and really build something. So we'll see. But I really honestly hope that they see Samoa Joe like we see Samoa Joe. I hope WWE really sees his body of work, sees the work he's done in the short term with WWE, and really views him in a high place. I really do. I don't know how they couldn't, Paul. I mean, I can't name a five guys right now that have really impressed me more than Samoa Joe in the short term that he's been a part of this roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if the WWE doesn't hear or see or notice anything that is happening in this feud right now, then they really are as dumb as the IWC thinks they are. I mean, I've read stuff that they have noticed, right? But you know, you don't really know, obviously. We can only guess, and we get secondhand information across the internet all the time. But if Samoa Joe isn't a part of their plans around the title or around the main event for the rest of this year and into next year, then there's a problem that we can't even begin to fathom within that writer's room, right? Because this has just been some unbelievable work, and I can't praise Samoa Joe enough for what he's been doing this entire run.
Yeah, you know, and I've got to, you know, if he wins the title, I may just have to go ahead and I'm buy my T-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Because I want his merchandise numbers to go off the wazoo. So I'm just saying, please, Joe, win.
Yeah. WWE, you want a whole $40? You got it waiting for you right here if you give him a title win.
Yep, there you go, right there. Money in your pocket.
Oh, my goodness. So I think the other really big story that we need to talk about before we get into the other stuff happening on Raw is, of course, the saga between Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Strowman wanders into Kurt Angle's office near the beginning of the show. He knows Roman Reigns isn't here. He doesn't think he's going to make the pay-per-view after the beating he gave him last week on Raw. And he tells Angle that he wants competition. And Angle smartly says, you know, there's a pay-per-view around the corner, and there aren't going to be a lot of people lining up to want to fight you after what you did to Roman last week. And Braun says, you know what, you're a smart man. You make it happen. We get a promo from Titus O'Neil later on in the night as he's trying to talk Apollo Crews into being one to take the challenge. It looks like he pretty much he succeeds. Crews looks set to go. Titus starts hyping him up and everything. And then that brings us to our main event segment, which has Braun walk down. He cuts a promo saying that there are a few things in life he enjoys more than beating the bejesus out of Roman Reigns, which, of course, the right live crowd just eats up. He kind of meanders along a little bit in this promo, but ultimately he comes out of it okay as he starts asking for competition. Out comes Titus, out comes Apollo, and I think they actually did pretty well in this, despite what it was meant to be. Braun was meant to look strong here. He absolutely does, but they let Apollo look like he could hang for about a minute, which was probably more than they really should have done, but it's appreciated, especially when you're trying to rehab Apollo and make sure that he can be something for you down the road. And of course he goes for that signature standing moonsault. Braun just raises his knees and tosses Apollo across the ring like a rag doll. And if you haven't been on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, there are GIFs of this everywhere. It's incredibly impressive. And Braun hits a power slam, decides that's not enough, hits a second one, decides it's still not enough, hits a third one, finally gets the 1-2-3. Titus comes in, he gets slapped around, he eats a power slam. Braun walks Apollo to an ambulance that was backed up before this match, tosses him in, and as he taps the back of it to try to get it to drive away, it doesn't. After a couple, after some further investigation on Braun's part, Roman Reigns jumps out the driver's side door. We get ourselves a Pier 6 brawl. Reigns ends up tossing Braun into the screens at the top and dents them pretty heavily. And then spears, easy for me to say, Braun right off the stage through some tables. Braun, however, ends up standing. Like, incredible. This was a really hot segment to go home on. I'm really hyped for this match, too, even though it is Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. They've had some great encounters throughout this this year and at the end of last year. And Braun, he looks so incredibly strong. Like, the commentators do a spectacular job of saying, how the hell do you beat this guy? Because so far, it looks impossible. It looks absolutely impossible to stop him.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just touch on Apollo because it's going to take me like a second. Apollo, I mean, there's really nothing to talk about because of the fact that they don't have him really going anywhere. The positives is what you said, Paul. He at least got to stand up for at least a short minute and to do a few things and, you know, kind of get some offense in, and that's positive. That's all he's pretty much going to get against a guy like Braun Strowman, let's be honest. That's not going to, you know, it's not believable for him. But I think that they really do need to keep working on Apollo and do some things with him and Titus. That whole brand thing, it's at least good that they had him on TV, right? At least they were available. But you're completely right about Braun Strowman, and this would be the other guy that would be on my hand counting five people that I think have done pretty well in their short term with WWE. And that's because they've really showed us that this guy – it's kind of like Jason Voorhees. You do what you want to him. You think you got him down, but you're not going to get him, keep him down. And he's larger than life. He's terrifying, and you should be scared of him. And I think that that's what they've done here. And really, Roman Reigns is the closest come to being the guy to try to stop Braun Strowman from devastating the entire roster, being the guy that kind of plays that part of, hey, hero, even though no one in the audience thinks he's really a hero, except the kids and some of the women that think he's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that that's great what they did here for the fact that it was one of those surprise things out of the ambulance, and really you had Roman Reigns doing his best to put this guy down and, you know, basically get that revenge he wanted to get. But Braun's, like I said, Jason Voorhees, you thought you had him down, but he stands right back up. So, I'm okay with all this, and I think that they needed to have this hot going in to Great Balls of Fire, and I think they did it. You know, they got you interested, and you're going to be looking forward to that ambulance match.
Yeah, I mean, despite the slight hiccup with Braun having to get surgery, this has been pretty hot going into this whole thing. So another match that looks like it could do a lot, do very well on this show, and for a show with the name it is and how I'll admit it, I was pretty bummed out that, you know, this pay-per-view seemed like it was going to be kind of a slum. They've really done a terrific job of making this feel like must-see TV.
Yeah, I agree with you. And they, you know, once again, I mean, are doing something really positive with a guy that's fairly young and really getting him out there to where people think, man, this guy is serious, and we should start thinking about, you know, how devastating can this guy be? And that's a really positive thing. They've worked on Roman Reigns for quite a while now, and Braun Strowman against a guy that they're already trying to build up. Man, they're doing a great job. So,
completely agree. So now let's turn around and let's talk about this Miz TV stuff. Miz comes out with Maurice and the Miztourage in tow. He talks about how absolutely silly LeVar Ball is in the family. He says Lonzo Ball's going to be the biggest draft bust in history, all these other things. Ambrose comes down, and then he starts running down Dean Ambrose because, you know, LeVar Ball wanted him to represent the Baller brand and all this stuff. And this brings Dean out, who's all pissed off and fired up and is ready to fight Miz tonight. However, Heath Slater comes down, says that he's been busting his ass for 8 years in this company, waiting for his chance, and he feels like now is finally the time to try to cash in on that. And he wants Dean to wait his turn. Dean turns around and tells Heath that you got to learn how to share and be patient, and you have to take your butt to the back of the line because it's Dean's turn. This brings out Kurt Angle. Tonight, it's going to be Miz and Slater for the Intercontinental title. This Sunday, it's going to be Dean Ambrose and the Miz one-on-one for the Intercontinental title. So that brings us to Miz and Heath Slater. A fine match, right? I mean, 13 minutes or so. Miz does end up winning. He has some Rhino shenanigans as he's trying to keep the Miztourage out of the ring. And this brings out Dean for a little bit, too, as Dean makes a save post-match. And that's pretty much it. I didn't really do a whole lot for me, honestly. Although it was nice to see Heath kind of getting a chance to stand in the spotlight a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think they're trying to work towards is getting him into that singles role, I think. I think that's what they're trying to gear themselves into and maybe trying to find a strong mid-carder out of Heath Slater because, you know, it's been rumored that, you know, him and Rhino were no longer going to be together in the future. So saying that, I think that they had to do this to make him at least relevant and, you know, something, you know, that he's been wanting a long time is an Intercontinental title. So I think it's good. I think overall that it was not a stupid thing. It didn't come out of nowhere. This has been something that's been kind of brewing. Overall, the match was fine. Did what they needed to do. You know, you always knew that, you know, everybody was going to have a part in this. You knew it wasn't just going to be a clean Miz winning. It was going to have some shenanigans involved. Even if Rhino was the one getting involved, it would have some shenanigans. I think, you know, at the end of the day, you get back to what you're originally trying to talk about, and that is Miz and Ambrose. They do that great here because they have Ambrose, you know, knocked out in the middle of the ring and Miz over him saying, you're never going to get this, all that kind of stuff. So they kind of go back and get back into what they're trying to build for Great Balls of Fire. But you do have Heath getting a little bit of the limelight here, which is important as well. So I think it was good. I think this was the best way to do it without actually having Ambrose and Miz in the ring again together. They had to do something different, and they added someone that they needed to build up. So I think it was smart. I didn't love it, but I thought it was fine.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's a feud that's really gone on way too long. And it's just because I don't think they know what to do with Dean, and they don't want to move him out of the spotlight. Miz, I think, is right about where he should be right now with all the other talent that's above him in the main event picture. This is a great way to keep him in a spotlight, keep him relevant, because he's so good at what he does. And this whole package, especially if it's going to help elevate Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas into something more, is an absolutely worthwhile stable to run with for a while. So I appreciate all that. It's just, as much as I love Dean, like, it's not really doing anything for anybody anymore. You know, we use this term a lot. It's busy work, almost.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people give Dean Ambrose a hard time and say, you know, look, man, you're great, but you're kind of goofy and all that. You need to change something. I really do think he needs to turn the volume up on the crazy part. I think that lunatic stuff needs to actually be a part of what he does as a character. I really feel like you can no longer depend on a title to be what defines Dean Ambrose. I think that's what they've done. They try, Dean is kind of over, but he needs that extra little thing. Give him a title. Mm-hmm. Oh, now there you go. It worked. It's a Band-Aid. You need to have him as crazy as he can get. I'm not saying he should be, you know, doing disgusting things, you know, throwing poop at people and stuff, but he needs to be pretty close to insane, though. Just coming out and beating the crap out of people. I think, you know, it may not be that babyface love that we want on him. Maybe they're not that shine of, oh, he's a goofy, funny guy. But I think you will have crowds and people get behind him. It's kind of funny. I really still to this day love the character of Ken Shamrock. And why did I love Ken Shamrock? Because he was the most dangerous man. He was a guy that you really felt like, man, he could go in there and kill anybody. And that was awesome about him. He had that feeling. That's the way I want to feel about Dean Ambrose. I want to feel like this is the craziest guy in the room. Like, I would be scared to be in the same room with this guy because he's that nutso. That's what they need to do. He needs to be more aggressive and take away a lot of the hokey, goofy stuff. And I think we can get a guy that doesn't have to hold a title, but can still do main event, can still do mid-card, and everybody's happy. But will they do that? I don't know.
You know, I don't know either, just because I feel like if they pull that trigger, they can only go so far with them being TVPG, and they don't want to worry about having to cross the line every week on television when they're trying to write something for them to do. On that same page, though, you have this revitalization thing going on with Goldust between R-Truth, and they get a segment on this show where Goldust talks about how selfish and jealous R-Truth has been of him. Show some footage of what we get to see of the assault last week, and then a lot of credits and stuff like that. And Goldust calls it a triumph in filmmaking. R-Truth ends up attacking him from behind, get a little bit of a brawl, and Truth ends up sending Goldust to the outside and standing tall. And, you know, if they go full old-school Goldust on this, he walked the line of what you could probably get away with on what was still something aimed at children in 95, 96, before you have the Attitude Era explode with Austin and all that. So I feel like TVPG is kind of a bad cop-out on Dean when you have an example of somebody who successfully, in a way, walked that line back in the old days.
Yeah, and that's a great comparison. You're completely right on that. And, you know, Goldust was very controversial. You know, he was a guy that people, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing it. Is he what I think he is? And really, what I love about, you know, the character, they always say, you don't need to know. Is it important? Not really. In current standards, Dalton Castle over there in Ring of Honor has done the exact same thing. Does it matter if he's what do you think he is? No, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that he's entertaining you, and it's actually something you're caring about. And I think that Goldust here is revitalized, and he's a guy that you still want to be like, oh my God, this is amazing. Even if I don't remember half the stuff from the old days, I'm loving what he's doing now. And that's a really positive thing. I think it's a great, and this thing with R-Truth is not boring. It's actually kind of exciting and fun. And what I loved about what they had tonight with it was, you know, you got a chance to see him in the ring. He kind of showcased the video stuff that he did last week, and it was actually from his camera guy too, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, are they going to show that footage? And they actually did. So really cool. It wasn't just the same old same. You got to see this what happened last week through a different lens. And overall, it didn't take a lot, but at the same point, it gave a lot. And I think that's what's important here. And I think, once again, it's one of the most interesting things that I can't wait to see what they actually do, you know, Great Balls of Fire, and see how they actually portray it. So, you know, it is kind of funny. You know, they kind of walk the line. They try. Even R-Truth can be a guy, too. You can say that, too, because R-Truth can be kind of gangster. He can be kind of a walking that edge too, I think, to an extent. And so I think that there's some great comparisons here, and let's hope that they can use those even in the PG era.
Absolutely agree with you on every point there, because it would help out a lot of guys, more than just Dean Ambrose for sure. So
yeah, and really quickly, the reason I say R-Truth, people are like, what do you mean by R-Truth? R-Truth, there's a lot of things in there that people would say are stereotypes. and a lot of verbiage that you see R-Truth use is very close to the edge on being controversial, and I think he could be even more controversial. So if you're wondering what I was talking about, that's what I mean, because they got to be very careful not to cross the lines that I think R-Truth could. So
I agree with you entirely. Something else, I mean, somebody else who could really benefit from towing that line on TVPG is of course, somebody we love to talk about when Gary is around, and that is, of course, Bray Wyatt. You have Seth Rollins come out and squash Curt Hawkins in a completely nothing segment. Rollins cuts a promo talking about how Bray is everywhere, except where Seth wants him to be when he's ready for a fight. Bray isn't anywhere to be found. He's always somewhere else, and Rollins says he doesn't need to be saved by Bray or anything like that, and he's gonna sort of, you know, cleanse him from his spirit and all that on Sunday, which is whatever, you know, right? It's the same stuff, really, I think, that we've heard time and time again from Rollins, although I do sort of appreciate him finally kind of painting Bray in this light of being this something more than what he is. And this leads to a segment where you get to see a package of Bray walking around in the desert, and then he cuts a promo out in that desert talking about he's going to make Rollins see God, and of course he's referring to himself. So I don't know, man. This felt really lame.
It's almost like they have to have the pillow segment on Raw. Like, hey guys, do you need a nap? Just take your quick nap here. Here's Seth Rollins. Here's a pillow. Enjoy. And it's not all about Seth Rollins. It's Bray Wyatt, too. Both these guys have a part in this.
Right.
And, I mean, Seth Rollins is trying. I don't think that he's not. I really do, but he's only got so much to work with. Mm-hmm. Bray Wyatt. I love Bray Wyatt, no matter how boring he is. But here's the problem, is they keep putting the same stuff in over and over. And now, I'll give him this. The video was pretty. It was nice. It was very beautiful. Great job. And you're all the cinematography, all that stuff, great. Guess what? All the same lines, same crap I saw last week, heard last week, same thing I heard the week before. We've heard this forever from Bray Wyatt. We don't need that. We need action. We need to see Bray Wyatt actually do what he says. We can't prove that. We can't do that right now. So guess what? This is a snore fest. I just don't care. I don't have much more to say. I just don't care about what they're doing here.
If I didn't have to do a show where I talked about this, I would have tuned out immediately with the second I heard them start talking. The second. Because they've done nothing to make you care. I'm sorry. There were times during that Triple H feud where I said that Seth was doing right as a face, but since that's ended, it is just, he's just been boring. Like, he's not an exciting babyface. And I don't know what's lacking from him. Because he was a great heel. Granted, he had a lot of elements around him. But he felt like a fuller character. And Bray has just lost so much, and they've taken away so much from him, that it's hard to just, it's hard to care. It really is. And unless he just starts setting people on fire, literally, I don't know if there's a lot more you can really do.
You're completely right on that, because, you know, all the mystery and all the mystique and all that stuff I used to talk about when he was fresh on the Raw roster about, man, Bray Wyatt could be the next Undertaker. They just said, hey, we're going to make fun of all that. We're going to make him the most unmysterious person in the world. Now, the biggest mystery he's going to do is he's going to have a disappearing act. Oh, my God. I mean, there are magicians out there who do that week in, week out. We don't need that. We need a guy that we actually feel like could be a deity. Really, I mean, prove it. You know, he keeps saying it every week. Prove it. A disappearing act is not a deity. Do something different. Please, please, please. And you know what? You're right. Setting someone on fire would probably be the most interesting thing, and it actually may get you close to believing he's a deity. They've destroyed his character so much, and the mystique around that character. I don't know if there's coming back unless they really get serious and they have to really get him dark. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's a guy on NXT that would terrify children way more than Bray Wyatt. I think people would probably lay in bed with a Bray Wyatt figurine sitting beside their bed. Aleister Black, on the other hand, I think that just seeing the character, seeing the you know, him sitting on the, so I just, yeah, I just so over it.
I mean, short of maybe sending him away for a while, retooling the gimmick, and trying to figure out a way to bring him back to where he legitimately seems terrifying, I don't know what else you can really do with this guy. I just don't. You've done a lot of the feuds with the guys on Raw already with Bray, and it's not like there's a great babyface waiting down the row for you to feud him with after this, so I don't know. It's looking a little bleak here.
Yeah, it really, really is. And there's going to have to be a lot happening to get this guy back on track, and I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. That kind of sucks to say, because this guy was absolutely a breath of fresh air for this company about 4 years ago. So.
Yeah.
Man, okay, let's talk about the women's division. Sasha Banks ends up teaming up with Bayley to take on Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax. They get about 10 minutes. Kind of a match that was just there, but it's not offensive or anything like that. Banks ends up making Alexa tap out after her and Nia have some issues. And they even send Bayley to the back after Nia runs her into the barricade. Bayley has to get help to the back. So it's just Sasha getting to look like Superwoman here a little bit and fending off both women and coming out with a big win. And then, of course, later on in the evening, Alexa Bliss gets some promo time. She's sort of asked how she feels about the loss, and she says she was just letting Sasha get a win out of pity to sort of make it feel like she has a chance. And I believe the interviewer is Dasha on Raw, sort of calls her out on her bullshit, and Alexa runs her down gloriously to sort of send it home.
Yeah, and if you didn't watch tonight's Raw, maybe you're listening to us to help catch you up on what's going on Raw. I'll just say this. Go check out this episode of Wrestling to the Max this week. I believe it's episode 154, I believe. I may be wrong on that, but I think it is. 254. Ah, what am I going? See, I'm going crazy.
I do the same thing. Don't worry about it, man.
254. Go check it out on our intro. This exact segment will be on our intro. I've already got it set. So, I love it. And I think that she does a great job week in and week out. That's why I think she's the number one right now. I think Charlotte's close, but I think right now she's got the top spot for me in both divisions for the SmackDown and Raw. But I think overall, this is an opportunity for them to get Sasha Banks in a good place, because they were taking her away from something that was mediocre and really doing nothing to put her in this spot where they want to build her back up. And I don't think it's too bad. It's kind of funny to see her come out of nowhere and all of a sudden be dominating, to where for a while there she was just kind of second fiddle. So, but you know, hey, at least they're getting her back involved. And I think it's going to be a decent situation here for her. I don't know if Sunday is the time for her to win, you know, the women's title, but I think at least it's great to see her having the opportunity. And that's positive. And I also like the fact that you do have someone like Alexa Bliss have to make excuses for, you know, losing and not having the victory come into play, and how dangerous Sasha Banks looks. That's another good thing about that, right, Paul? I mean, they're pointing out that, man, you know, maybe you should worry about Sasha. You took her life, but look at this. I mean, she's doing good things. So maybe not the strongest build, but at least they're working on it for Sasha, and that's a very good thing.
I mean, I will agree with you. So far, since the Superstar Shakeup, as far as the women's division on Raw goes, Alexa has really had the ball the whole time. She's been able to run with it, and she succeeded most of the time. I won't say all the time. And when it comes to both divisions and WWE as a whole, as far as the main roster goes, so many of the women, I feel like, have half of the equation, right? Some of them are great wrestlers, but maybe don't have the character work down so much, or they have the character work down pat, but they maybe don't have so much of the wrestling ability down. I think Alexa Bliss comes closest to being great at both. She certainly does have the character work down, bar none. And we've seen her wrestling is good. You know, it's not like it's atrocious or anything, but she's nowhere near the level of, I would say, Sasha or Charlotte to a degree, and certainly Becky Lynch. But it's not like she's bad, and she certainly has made this division worth watching most of the time, especially considering the botch job they've done with Bayley so far. And Sasha does seem like she might be able to compete this Sunday, so you're right. Not great build, but I feel like that match might actually be something good and something that you're going to want to see.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I do think that they'll have a pretty decent match. And excuse me, I think she'll also, you know, give you something that will, you know, make you feel like she's worthy being in that picture. You know, for a long time, you weren't really thinking that. Now, even if she doesn't win on Sunday, at least you feel like Sasha deserves to be in the picture. And that's important. They need to do that. They've kind of put Bayley in the bad situation. She's kind of taken Sasha's role and hanging out in the back, you know. So.
Completely agree with you. So, the last stuff we really have left to talk about is all the cruiserweights. Cedric Alexander gets to cut a promo saying that he wants to be done with this Noam Dar, Alicia Fox business. Everybody who watches 205 Live lets out a loud yes in agreement. Of course, that's nobody in the live audience. So, this brings out Noam Dar because they're going to have a match. He's got Alicia Fox with him, who's in a neck brace. Cedric absolutely schools Noam about 2 minutes, and Alicia Fox attempts a distraction, but that just leads to a lumbar check. And Cedric walks out of this the victor. Fox rips off her neck brace in rage, so she's probably just faking the entire thing. I don't know if anybody cares. Please, dear Lord, let this be over.
Oh, man. We've been praying that for a long time, and it's just it's not happening. But I really, let's just, yes, Lord, let this be the finale. Let this just be something we hopefully will not remember. But, you know, I think at least they gave it a little bit of limelight here, and this was not on 205. They trying to do what they can to get this thing over with, and Cedric Alexander comes out looking good, which is very positive for him, and I'm happy with that. So we'll see. But, man, I am so done with this, too. And Noam Dar and Alicia Fox, hey, they do fine together. Well, move on from Cedric, for God's sakes, guys. I mean, come on. There's other guys on 205 you can really screw with. But let's do that.
Absolutely. Let's do that. Anything. Just try anything. We'll take it at this point.
Yes.
And then, finally, the Cruiserweight Champion Neville goes one-on-one with Mustafa Ali. I really enjoyed this. It's about 7 minutes of furiousness. Ali gets some good hope spots. He hits an absolutely disgusting leaping DDT on Neville. Neville, however, turns the tables on Mustafa Ali, who goes up to the top rope. Neville shoves him off. Mustafa Ali eats the guardrail very hard, and Neville just essentially destroys him from there. Really, really looks strong going into this match with Akira Tozawa this Sunday. Of course, it is not on the main card. It is on the pre-show. GRRY. But it might mean that they get a lot of time. And it's certainly a reason to watch the pre-show now if you're looking for one.
Definitely. And you see the way that Neville works. You see how exciting he is. It's a given. And I'm, you know, of course, in this match you saw in this with, you know, it was just so much fun with Mustafa Ali. I mean, those two guys, that's the future right there. That's the next battle, I think.
Yeah.
That could take place. Now, I don't know if the title is going to be involved because, I mean, Akira Tozawa definitely could take that title. I think he's the right guy to do it if they're going to have anybody do it. But, you know, I love Mustafa Ali and everything he has to offer. And I think it proves it right here against the guy that's one of the, you know, the top guy in 205 Live in the Cruiserweight division in Neville. So all good stuff here. I think it does a good job also in really, you know, getting you ready for that little, you know, it's a pre-show, but for me, a very important match, if you ask me.
Certainly one with the potential to steal the show if given enough time. Tozawa and Neville are just two fantastic workers. So if they really get, like I said, if they get the time and the ability to just sort of cut loose, certainly good things are in our future for sure. But that's going to do it for this episode of Raw, Gary. We just got to put a number on it. What are you rating this bad boy?
You know, overall, this was a pretty decent go-home. I think, for the most part, they had a lot of components that really got you excited about what's going to be taking place at Great Balls of Fire. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 7. I mean, I think overall a lot of positives, a few negatives we talked about, a few things that we just don't care about, and so that kind of brings us down a little bit. But I still think a 7 is a fair number for a show that I think really did put you in a good place for most of these matches, and especially the ones that you should care about the most.
I agree with all those points entirely. I think the matches that are going to sell you on this show, that being Joe Lesnar, Strowman Reigns, and to a lesser degree, some of the undercard stuff, depending on what it is, might also sell you on this too. I personally find The Miz and Ambrose feud to be a complete bore. Rollins and Wyatt is a chore. I think the women's division will shape up to be something good. The cruiserweight division obviously looks great, and the tag team match, definitely something that's probably going to sell a lot of people on this show too. So, there's just not a lot of good wrestling on this show, and if you're watching for that, it's not a great episode, but character-wise and segment-wise, this hit a lot of the right buttons. I don't know if I'm willing to say 7. I am willing to say 6.5 for sure. I don't feel like it was as good as some of the stuff we saw last week, which I think I gave a 7. So, 6.5 for sure here, and I'm really looking forward to the Sunday, though. For a show I had a little bit of hesitation about going to, I'm all in. I am all in.
Yeah, and fair enough. And I think Paul is going to get a great show in store for himself, and it's going to be awesome. And heck, I mean, guys, if you want to hear Paul's live experience at Great Balls of Fire, we're going to be doing a show late on Sunday night. So you'll probably listen to it Monday morning on the download. But we're going to be doing a review show for Great Balls of Fire, and hopefully everything works out in the right way. Paul will be giving his live perspectives, being in the audience and, you know, talking about this entire show. Sean and I will review it, watching the network, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to actually do that show, because I think there's going to be some big things that will be taking place that we can't wait to talk about. So be checking that out. Of course, if you go subscribe at Wrestling to the Max, you'll get it. You'll be right in your dock on Monday morning on your drive to work, or maybe on your jog, or wherever you do and listen to our podcast. Make sure you subscribe so it's in your dock right immediately whenever you pick up your device to get your podcast. Also, the W2M Network is out there as well, and make sure you go to subscribe there if you want to go find all our other great wrestling content at W2Mnet.com. It'll be there in your dock as well when we release those shows, plus a lot more from our awesome website over there at W2Mnet.com. Also, don't forget, from WomanMania.com, our content will be right there as well, so we appreciate those guys and everything they do for us. Besides that, that is Monday Night Raw. We hope you enjoyed this episode and this review. Until next time, we will see you guys down the road.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.